All right, well, our first speaker comes to us from Fresno. Please give it up for Carrie L.
Thank you. Yeah, I brought a book just in case I run out of things to say. I'm Carrie. I'm an alcoholic. Hi, everyone. Thank you. That's fun every time. I appreciate it. I am so grateful to be here. Thank you, Johnny, for asking me to do this. It is a privilege and an honor to be asked to be of service at any AA event, and especially something as fun as this one. I was here last year, and I had a great time. Thank you to everybody who's been of service to this event and to the Toffee Paw Committee. Y'all are doing really important things for a lot of people in the Valley to help people stay sober, including me. I always have a good time whenever I come hang out with y'all, so thank you. I had the most incredible experience yesterday. I'm very grateful to be a sponsor. I never thought when I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous that I would have the honor of being asked to help somebody else stay sober because I was struggling with it myself. And now, almost 4 years after I first walked into the rooms, I have a couple of sponsees that I'm working with on, you know, I talk to on a regular basis. We go through the book and we're working the steps. My life has gotten so big and beautiful at this point that I often ask sponsees to come over to my house early in the morning. And if you had told me 4 years ago that I would be telling people to meet me at my house at 7 o'clock in the morning so that we could read a book, I wouldn't have believed you. So I had this sponsee over at my house, and it was about 8 o'clock in the morning. And earlier in the morning, I'd had, like, some gurgling in my belly, and I was like, oh, that sucks. And so I took some medication, and she came over, and we started talking, and she's, like, going through it, you know, having this spiritual experience. We're really in the book, and she's about to say her third step prayer. And I had told her previously, like, how I had this deep spiritual experience when I read the third step prayer for the first time myself. And as we're getting closer and closer to that moment, I started, like, sweating. And I was, like, feeling the gurgling a little bit more, like, from both ends. And by the time it was time for us to actually say the prayer, I was like, excuse me for one moment. And I, like, ran to the bathroom and, like, projectile vomited. So, you're welcome. This is my life in recovery. I spent most of yesterday vomiting or otherwise in the bathroom for other reasons, and I told a friend of mine, I don't know if I'm going to make it to the event tomorrow night, and so thankfully I have a couple of backups here, people who have agreed to speak for me in the event that I have to run to the bathroom in the middle of this, but I think I'm only going to speak for about 10 to 15 minutes, so I think we'll be okay. But the point of me telling you that is that not everything in recovery is sunshine and roses. I get sick a lot, actually, and it's extremely unpleasant. And I spent yesterday feeling more hungover than I've felt in a really long time. I haven't felt that feeling of just being like, I couldn't keep any food down. I was like drinking Pedialyte and like just like moaning and like rolling back and forth in my bed, and it was really pathetic and awful. But I never once thought about drinking. You know what I mean? Like, I never, like, I had a friend who brought me everything that, like, a friend brought me the Pedialyte and broth and things that I needed, and my phone was blowing up with people who were, like, caring about me and wanting to be me to be well, and that's a completely different life that I live today than I did when I first walked into the rooms. My sobriety date, my most recent sobriety date is October 4th, 2015. I was speaking last weekend and I lied about my sobriety date. I've had a couple of them. Actually, in the year 2016, the thing that I was saying was that I love the first step because the first step is about surrender and it's about honesty. And the thing that I love about honesty that I've learned about in Alcoholics Anonymous is the truth that I know about myself today is going to be different than the truth that I know in 6 months if I continue working these steps and this program. And I know that from experience, and I know that from the experience of other people in my life. Because in the year, I think it was 2017, actually. No, it was 2016. I had 3 sobriety dates and I never used. And the reason for that is what I thought of as sobriety changed. You know, I haven't had a drop of alcohol since January 24th, 2013. That's when I was arrested. But that is not my sobriety date. And so I actually love it when people talk about drugs in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, because my alcoholism includes more than just alcohol abuse. Right? My alcoholism includes lying, cheating, manipulating. It includes drug use. It includes all kinds of other things besides just putting the drink in my mouth. And I didn't know that until I worked the steps. So October 4th, 2015 is not my first sobriety date. Hopefully it's my last one. I just recently celebrated 3 years clean and sober. Thank you. I have a sponsor who has a sponsor who has a sponsor. She's my sponsor. I have a home group. It's Fresno Fellowship. I am in service. I'm on the steering committee at Fresno Fellowship. I secretary a Thursday night speaker meeting. I sponsor. And I take people through the book. I make myself available. I talk to the newcomers. I do what I'm told for the most part. And I know today that it's because of those things that I'm not only sober, but I'm also happier and freer than I've ever been in my entire life. I didn't know how badly I needed freedom when I walked into the rooms, because I didn't know just how bound I was. You know, we talk about having the bondage of self. And now, from now on, ever since I had this experience with my sponsee yesterday, I'm always going to think of it as the bondage of self. Yeah, you know, you really got to get it out. I didn't know just how many things, like my experiences, my feelings, my judgments of myself, how much I cared about what other people thought of me. I didn't know how much all of those things were keeping me bound and in the end keeping me drunk, because I didn't even know. It's like, you know, they talk about the fish in the ocean. Like, do they know that they're in water? So if you're an alcoholic and you're miserable, do you know you're miserable if that's all that you're surrounded by? And I didn't. I didn't know how unhappy I was until I started to get better. And so much of my story has been about denial. I come from a fantastic family. I actually come from really amazing parents who have never told me anything but I love you and I want you to be happy. And somehow they ended up with me. And I was very deeply unhappy from a really, really young age. I actually recently started therapy again. This is my third time being in therapy. I'm 34 years old. I started my first time in high school. And this new therapist was telling me that usually people who aren't abused don't have the experience of thinking about killing themselves in high school. And yet here I am, and I don't remember being abused. And I've been thinking about killing myself since I was in high school. And not like planning to kill myself. Like, some people get really tense and uncomfortable when you talk about suicidal ideation. But for me, it's just kind of like an option. Like, I'm very spiritually lazy. And so, like, if the option is, like, personal growth or death, I'm like, you know, I don't know if anybody can relate to that. These are very serious phrases in the room. I have to laugh about it because that's who I am, right? I can't control my thoughts and feelings. All I can do is control my behavior and hope that the thoughts and feelings will follow. And that's something else that I learned in Alcoholics Anonymous as well. So I come from two really amazing parents. This therapist was telling me that maybe, like, attachment theory is something that affected me when I was little, that I wasn't held enough or my diaper wasn't changed fast enough or something when I was, like, a baby far back when I couldn't even remember. I don't know. I don't know the reason for it, but I've been really unhappy and angry from a very, very young age with no seeming reason. Right? Like, I have these amazing parents who love me, and I have trouble connecting with other people. I think that I have this, like, deeply held belief that I'm a fundamentally unlovable person, and that if I tell you the truth about who I am, then there will be something about me. I don't know what it is, so I have to figure out who you are and what you want from me so I can show you or project to you the kind of person that I think you want me to be, so that we'll be able to be okay, so that I'll be able to get what I need from you, we'll be friends, we'll get along, you won't reject me. And it takes a lot of energy to do that. And so I spent a lot of energy from a very young age trying to learn how to survive in this world amongst other people. Needless to say, I really loved being alone because it was the only time when I was truly at rest, aside from all of, like, the chaotic, obsessive thinking that I've been struggling with from a really young age. Again, like, oh, I shouldn't have said that, or oh, I should have said that, or is that what they really meant by doing, you know, just like always that obsessive thinking that takes a lot of energy. And thinking it was normal because I didn't know anything else. If I've always been that way, then how am I going to how would I even have any frame of reference for there being a different way of living, right? If that's just how I am. So I actually didn't start drinking or anything until I graduated from high school. My parents are teachers, and so I always had in my mind that if I, used drugs or alcohol and I got caught, that it would make them look bad. They've always been so loving and wonderful to me. I'll just wait until I'm an adult to fuck up my life, because that's what I was really excited to do. Like, I was really excited to just burn everything to the ground. In the absence of feeling love, I think I really craved chaos. And so that's what I built for myself. I moved out of my parents' house when I was 17, about to be 18. I moved in with like 5 other people. Recently, I was talking to a friend about all the different people that I've lived with. And I've lived with like at least 15 other people in my lifetime. I've lived for the last 10 years alone, thank God. But it was very chaotic, because from that point, and I had tried drinking a couple of times before that, but in secret, it was very creepy and I tried to hide it from people. But when I moved out, I moved into this situation where there would be parties all the time. Like, it started like 2 nights a week, like Friday, Saturday, and then it would just be all the time. I went to school because it was expected in my family that you went to college after you graduated from high school. I hated it because they expected things from me and I don't really enjoy that part of life. So I dropped out. I got my first job and I was just drinking all the time that I could. I found people who were older than me. I was going out to bars and drinking before it was legal for me to do that. I always had older friends because they could buy alcohol for me. And I've been a blackout drinker from the very beginning. I really was never like a cute drunk. I was never like a sipping kind of like have a cocktail with dinner or a glass of wine with dinner. I was more like a how many can I chug? Let's do shots. I can drink more than you. It was like competition with myself. I don't know if anybody else was really a part of that, but I drank a lot. I drank a lot from the very beginning, and I drank fast, so I would black out. And I had the experience, which I thought was kind of funny at the time because I didn't really care about myself very much, of people having to explain to me what I had done or said or been with or whatever the situation was from the time I was like 17, 18 years old. So my drinking progressed from there. I would drink off and on. I moved around a lot because I could never quite find the right. I always thought it was like I needed to find the right job, or I needed to find the right partner, or I needed to find the right alcohol to drink, or I was constantly changing my situation. Like, I would live a life for about 6 months and then change everything and then live it for about 6 months. And in the end, my parents would always clean up my messes because they're wonderful people, and they had no idea what to do with me because neither of them come from alcoholic families or backgrounds. They had absolutely no idea what to do with me other than, like, throw money at the problem. So they would fix, like, whatever situations that I would get myself into. And it progressed for 11 years until it got to the point where in my final year of drinking, alcohol wasn't enough. I couldn't get drunk enough. I was drinking from the very... So when I first started at 17, I was drinking so much that I would spend the whole day, next day, hungover until 5 p.m., where I was, like, throwing up parts of my body, like bile, And never once did it occur to me to quit drinking, because it was the only thing that brought me any kind of freedom. And so if you do that for 11 years... I couldn't drink enough to get that feeling that I needed anymore. And so I would drink before I went out to the bar. I would drink a few at the bar. I would go to the bathroom, make myself throw up because I would get full because I would get drunk, like full before I could get drunk. So I would throw up, come back out, drink a couple drinks, go smoke weed to settle the stomach down because I had done all that vomiting, and then drink a couple more before closing, and then go out after because I found out that if you do cocaine, you actually stop being drunk. I don't know what the chemistry of that is. I'm not a doctor. But if you do cocaine, you stop being drunk and you can get drunk all over again at like 4 o'clock in the morning. So my last year of drinking was really, I had to do a lot of lying to myself in order to make that okay. Because deep down in my heart, I knew that I was raised to be better than that. I did not come from the kind of family where I would be looking for cocaine at 4 o'clock in the morning, hanging out with strangers, doing God knows what, just so that I could feel okay. It wasn't even about getting drunk anymore. It wasn't about getting fucked up. It was about feeling okay. And I don't know about you all, but in all of that time that I was collecting all of this, like, these experiences, a lot of them were traumatic. So I had these traumatic experiences that I was not dealing with, and so I would have to drink more in order to feel okay, just to get, like, a baseline of okay. It stopped being fun, and it started being necessary. And I'm so, so, so grateful that when I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous for the first time, that I heard people telling stories exactly like mine, because I was so ashamed, and I felt so alone in all of those experiences. And yet, when I came in, I got arrested for driving under the influence. Shock of my life. I had been driving drunk for about 10 years, and I had no idea. I thought I was completely sober, but if that was drunk, I was very drunk when I was driving. So when I got arrested, I knew that I had to quit drinking, but I had no idea how to live a different life. So I quit drinking. I stopped talking to all of the people that I hung out with. I moved into an apartment by myself. I sold a bunch of my shit. I traveled a lot in that first year, and I did no program because I didn't know anything about AA. Finally, I reached out to somebody who, the only person that I knew that was sober, who had drank like I drank and had gotten sober. I called her and I said, hey, how do you do this? She said, go to a women's meeting. I went to a women's meeting. They were happy. They were smiling. They were celebrating. I hated it. I didn't go back for 6 months until I got desperate enough again to go to a different women's meeting. I still go to that women's meeting today. It's over at Fresno Fellowship. There are still women that I met that were first. My friend Stephanie right here was the first secretary of that meeting when I walked into that meeting. And I'm so, so, so grateful for the people in this program who are in service, because y'all kept the doors open when I needed them. So that was almost 5 years ago that I first walked in, and I've now only got 3 years clean. So is anybody celebrating their first holiday sober, by the way? Awesome. Yes. I want to talk to you after the meeting. Oh my God. That's amazing. Fucked up, huh? That's amazing. For those of you who raised your hands back there, you're a miracle. I'm so, so, so happy that you're here. I'm happy that I'm here. The steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and sponsorship have changed my life. I have a degree of freedom today that I never thought was possible. I know more about myself today. And I want to read you something just in my last couple of seconds here before I take off. I'm sorry I stayed sick for too long, y'all. This painful past may be of infinite value to other families still struggling with their problem. Oh, by the way, everybody know what this is?
Yeah.
The Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know what this was until like 2 years after I came in. True story. if you don't have one yet, get one. Somebody will help you with it. This painful past may be of infinite value to other families still struggling with their problem. We think each family which has been relieved owes something to those who have not. And when the occasion requires, each member of it should be only too willing to bring former mistakes, no matter how grievous, out of their hiding places. Showing others who suffer how we were given help is the very thing which makes life seem so worthwhile to us now. Cling to the thought that in God's hands, the dark past is the greatest possession you have, the key to life and happiness for others. With it, you can avert death and misery for them. And that's pretty much how I live my life today. It's a completely different story than it used to be. If you want to come talk to me more about what my life is like after the meeting, welcome to our newcomers. I'm really, really glad that you're here. I'm again super, super grateful that I had this opportunity, and I'm completely out of time. So thank you so much, and Merry Christmas.
All right. Thanks, Carrie. All right. We're going to take a 10-minute break. This is your last chance to get raffle tickets. I'm waiting for everyone to sit down. Oh. Charles, everybody, Charles. Give Carrie one more round of applause before we start. Thank you, Carrie.
Yeah, girl.
And it's my pleasure now to bring up our next speaker from Fresno, Thomas C.
What's up? My name's Thomas. I am an alcoholic. Hi guys, grateful to be sober. It's funny because I ran into Carrie before the meeting, right before we even ate, and she says, hey, you get nervous doing these things? And I'm like, no, I don't get nervous. And she's like, what are you doing in the women's restroom? But I say, I love that joke. I've done that every single time. You must have a restroom thing here in Visalia. Visalia Bergians. I spent a lot of time here in Visalia. I lived here for a while, and Trunks Only on Main. Right? The was that the Ice House? I just spoke over there a little while ago. I got kicked out of Double L. Anybody else get kicked out of Double L? Yeah. It gets foggy. Here, well, it gets foggy in Fresno too, but I got lost. I got kicked out of Double L because of her. Whatever, I can't even remember what her name was, but I got kicked. And there's those, I went out in Lover's Lane, and there's a couple dirt lots right there. I don't have to tell you guys, and it was foggy. I got lost. I almost froze to death. Drunk, just so drunk, I could not find a road. Yeah, ever have that problem? Welcome to AA. Can't find the road. So yeah, it's pretty cool. I love this area here. I have a lot of normal friends too. People don't have problems with alcohol and drugs, and I do these, you know, like this, speak places. I have a friend that's normal, and I'm giving him directions to this, you know, place. I'm like, you know, you turn left here. If you go to the railroad tracks, you went too far. You know, like there's a large Mesozoic tree around the road. So you know how you give those directions. And he's like, yeah, but how do I know that it's you guys there, like the recovery people? I'm like, oh, you'll know. Just like he saw 10 minutes ago. Can't you just see us from a long ways away? The vaping, the smoking. Or you even walk. I know how you walk. I can know that they're moving around. Everybody talking, nobody listening. You know, this is the only time we get together. We spend a lot of time here in these meetings where one person talks and you all listen. You know, it's kind of a part of the AA therapy, isn't it? Especially a group like us. I've always been self-centered, self-willed, self-driven, self-reliant. I've always done whatever I wanted to do whenever I wanted to do it. Never paid any attention to anybody else's will, what you needed, what you wanted. You know, like I'm very centered on myself. And the chance that the thing is, the first thing we learn how to do here is listen. That's pretty cool. You know? Well, what makes me different? It's important to know, like, what makes me an alcoholic, I think. You know, I think 9 times out of 10, most of the time, it's a misunderstanding of what the problem is. Because if you don't really know what the problem is, chances are you're going to formulate a totally wrong solution for it. Totally wrong action plan for it. You know, and in my case, alcohol does something for me that doesn't do actually for everybody else. So I think the best place for me to start is the first drink. Maybe a little bit before that. I was interested in listening to Carrie talk about her upbringing. My mom had me at 16 here in Fresno. I was told I was conceived underneath the bleachers of the McLean Fresno High football game. I don't know what that has to do with my alcoholism. It may have something to do with somebody else's alcoholism. And so my mom and dad were kind of doomed from the start. My dad's got 38 years sober. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, he's an asshole. Yeah. However, my grandma and grandpa took me. I mean, a 16-year-old, what are you going to do? I talked to my mom this morning. We have a great relationship today. But what are you going to do? She was not equipped for that. So my grandma and grandpa took me. And then shortly after that, at 5 years old, my grandpa left my grandmother, and my grandmother, the only work she ever did was pick cotton outside of the Fresno area. She met a handsome, charismatic cotton gin manager, my grandpa. And she always told me that. He was so handsome. You know, that's the only work she ever did was pick cotton. So here she was, an abandoned woman, raising an abandoned child with no way to make any money. She got on at IRS in Fresno, over on Butler. So we lived in a trailer park. And I remember being 8 years old. What would happen is, I was embarrassed I lived in the trailer park. Space 218, represent. Space 218. If your address has a space in it, and we had a single wide, it's like, it wasn't even as good as a double wide. Like, we're bad in there, you know what I mean? If you're, you know, getting judged by other people in the park. I would go to the back of the park and jump the fence at 9, 10 years old. And I remember having, in hindsight, the conversation with myself, that 8 year old mind, like reasoning that out, like mom and dad. My grandmother looked really young, which really helped because nobody would ask, you know, until I said grandma, they thought it was my mom. I mean, she looked young. So that kind of saved me a lot of hassle. But I remember having the conversation like, you know, I'm okay with it. I'm okay with it. And I know now, it's not so uncommon, but I know now that an 8 year old trying to reason like I'm okay with people leaving, important people leaving, it's not okay. But it is what it is. And I did good around people. I made lots of friends. You know, alcoholic people are like charismatic people, aren't we? Like, I did good with guys. Like, I played guitar. I played soccer. I was a really good soccer player. I got in a band really early on. I had a group of friends I was always a part of, or, you know, I usually would be a leader of, like come up with ideas, plans, you know, and stuff like that. But when I get around you guys, you ladies, and get that shaking going on the inside, I'll be 48 in January. You guys still make me nervous. You know, and me and my friend Jeremy Osborne, I shouldn't say his name. I do that every time. Me and Jeremy, I used to hang out with him, and we were over at Wilson Elementary. If you know Fresno, you know where that is, over on Ashland. In between there was a middle school and my elementary school, and me and Jeremy were over there. It was after school, and we were walking back there. There was something going on, and we went over to the cafeteria there, and up what they had is there was like a stairway like this, kind of, but there was a stairway that led to a door. And inside the door, we're walking by, and it stopped because there was this beautiful vision. Her name was Teresa. And she was on stage. It was just like this. And it was a talent show tryout. So she had the microphone there, and she was doing a new song, Don't Stop Believing. It's a hit on the radio. I know this is young people, so it's on Glee. You seen Glee? Don't stop believing.
Hold on to that
feeling. Hey, yeah, yeah, yeah. Street light. I digress. And she was killing it, okay? And I'll tell you, let me tell you this, okay? So she had one of those white halter tops with the spaghetti strings, okay? And then she had the big aquanet, the big feathers curving around the back. She had those Fresno Fair roach clips clipped on, the feathers. She had the little small half moccasins. And I know you know this if you're old. She had those zip around Rag City Blues. You guys don't know what you're missing, those zip around Rag City Blues, man. And she was killing it, man. She was trying out for that talent show. And I was just standing there just transfixed. Like, I couldn't go near her. Me and Jeremy had found in his garage, we found a lot of things at his parents, too, by the way. But we had found some Southern Comfort. And we went around the backside of Wilson Elementary, and I took a pull. Whoa. Look at that. I'm getting nervous already just thinking about it. I took a pull off of that Southern Comfort and just went down just off my feet. That's what happens to me when I drink. Just, my hair goes... That warmth. I know if you're laughing at that, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. Normal people don't laugh at my shit. You're laughing, you're identifying. We're not laughing at you, man. We're laughing with you. I have a story about that later if I get that far. And she came trotting down she was finished, and she came trotting down the side, man. Jeremy was like, what are you doing? I not only was I able to go up to her, I went right up to her, man, like right up close. And I pulled her in. I looked at her eyeball to eyeball. You know, I was like, I arrived in Alcoholics Anonymous in the summer of 1995 the first time. And I was sober for 6 years the first time before I realized that my whole life I had never looked anybody in the eye. When I talked to people, I would get this anxiety going on. They call it restless, irritable, and discontent. This separateness from other people, including myself and God. That's kind of advanced AA. I'm going to leave that alone tonight. But being separate, different, and alone. Separate, different, and alone by nature. I didn't know until I was 6 years sober the first time that I never looked people in the eyes. And I noticed this guy's like, why are you looking at my forehead? I would look at you here and have conversations with you. Or in your eyebrows and have conversations with you. And I would act. I could portray a person. But I went right after Teresa Brewer, and she may have been the first time I'd ever looked at her. I looked her right in the eyes, man, and I meant it. I said, I've been watching you for a long time. How are you doing? I'm going to steal that from my pitch. And whatever I was saying, I don't know what it was, but she was liking it. And we were laughing, and we were connecting. And in 20 minutes, I had my first kiss from the woman of my dreams. Yeah, thanks, man, thanks. Alcohol worked for me from the start. You find something that does that for you, that takes away restless, irritable, and discontent, that makes me able to connect with you. And that's that advanced AA. There's this disconnection with things that I'm treating with. You know, and you hear it around here all the time. Stuff and feelings, whatever. But that moment, that day, it does something for me. Now, everybody feels good when they drink alcohol, but I tell you later on, as my story progresses, it filled that for you. And what I've learned over time, I relapsed at 13 years and really wrapped my hands around what I felt like was a wrought iron, cold nature of the gates of insanity and death, like around opening the gate. And I have paperwork. We say I'm crazy all the time. Well, I'm crazy, I'm crazy. I got paperwork that says I'm crazy. Not that that makes me any worse than you. I'm just saying that I've gone from a happy, beautiful, relatively free sobriety to absolute insanity again. It's been 9 years since that happened, and I'm grateful to be back. But I do take this thing very, very seriously. But alcohol does something for me that it doesn't do for other people. So later on, when it says in our book on page 30, we learned that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves. That's a lot more than admitting, dude. Think about those words for a second. We learned that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were alcoholics. And that sounds nice, right? Hey, we're learning. I like learning. I learned I won $5 on the scratcher. I learned she thought I was cute. Many of us have a lot of pain learning that we had to concede to our innermost selves that we were an alcoholic. Many of us have. And the pain of that. But it does something for me that it doesn't do for other people. My life went along pretty well for some time. I started having issues in middle school. By the time I was in high school, I was getting kicked out as a sophomore. And though most of us find the most beautiful, I ended up getting married as a young man. Found a beautiful, smart woman. Her dad owned a liquor store. Stephanie's cousin, I'm not going to blow his cover, but he was like, oh, yeah, what, really? Is she nice? Oh, yeah, she's nice. Oh, really? How is she nice? Well, her dad owned some Didier's liquor on fucking Chestnut. He's like, oh, you're kidding me. So, I mean, I wanted to do different things in my life. I had a lot of things planned. Like, I wanted to play paintball. I tell people that all the time. They'll come up after the meeting, like, you played ping pong, like Forrest Gump ping pong? I'm no, like, paintball, like, shoot you in the face. But I'm alcoholic. I do everything alcoholically, a higher degree. I didn't want to play paintball down at Blackbeard's in Fresno or, you know, wherever you played out here. But I tell you, I wanted to be a professional paintball player. You know, the key to the word professional means you get paid. I know a lot of professional paintball players sleeping on couches, dude. Yeah, but later on I realized that there's lots of power greater than yourselves. Like, I've been able to have, what did it say? The lady, somebody read chapter 3. Good job. Good job, my guy. That there was brief periods of recovery. And I found that I've always had a power greater than myself at certain times that will keep me sober. But the problem with it is it's never lasting. And paintball was a power greater than myself. And like I said, I didn't want to just play it on the weekends. I ended up playing all around the country. And by the time I was 20 years old, I was married. She was pregnant. My wife was pregnant. And I was doing this paintball business with a friend of mine. 23 years old, summer 1993, maybe toward the end part of 1993, and we were doing custom paintball equipment. I was getting phone calls from manufacturers that were like my heroes. People that I only saw in magazines were calling me, hey, can you do something for my gun? This is like a dream job. So it's always, there's a page in our book on page 61, and on the top of that page, I had a friend that showed me, and I show all my guys, I put the if only page, page 61. If only this was that way, if only she was this way, if only I had the right amount of money, if only I had the right kind of house, if only I had the 6 Series, you know, I wouldn't have to drink. If only all my supplies were met. And what I've learned is over time, I stayed sober there in that time period. We were bringing in $15,000 a month in the summer of 1993. That's a lot of money right now. You know, doing what I wanted to do with my heroes calling me. You know? And I stayed sober for a year on a power grader myself, that paintball and that business. And it's interesting because I was a long ways from the single-wide trailer at Space 218 at Dakota and Marks when you find yourself on the other side of Herndon in one of those houses you only dreamed of with a woman that provided everything that you needed with the baby and the little play picket fence, the little Dodge minivan with the door that goes, opens for you. And I drove a Pinto. Yay, sweet. Yay, represent. And I started, you know, I figured, well, I could have a couple beers after, you know, after work, you know, and I had problems all the way growing up. I stole a purse once out of me and Ed's. I waited and watched this lady, you know, smart guy. I watched this lady who had a soccer team in there. She wasn't paying attention. I stole her purse. I told my grandmother, who was a very moral person. I definitely knew the difference between right and wrong. We were not religious, but I'd never met a person that had more morals than my grandmother did. And she got me out of town, got me to my mom's, lied for me. People do that for us. Go against anything to try to help us. I'd had problems all the way growing up. I started drinking again, and maybe, you know, just using a little bit of me and my partner's money. Inside of 3 weeks, there was a statewide APB out for me. See, I wouldn't tell you I had an alcohol and drug problem. Like, my business partner's like, man, we got to find Thomas. Like, somebody kidnapped him. My little Asian wife, she's going, he's an alcoholic. He's an addict. This is what happened. Nope, something happened. It's not happen. Thomas doesn't do that. And there was a new ad. There was something new that people were using. They call it ATM. Did you know they have cameras on those? I did not know that. And they had video of me. And when I finally arrived, like a week later, you know, you make that phone call. And I'm crying. I'm a crier. Anybody else a crier here? Are you crying? I'm a crier. And it's not crocodile tears. I can do that too, but man, I would mean it. That's how I know that I used to play games with myself, like maybe I just don't want to get sober. No, that's part of the obsession, man. Maybe I haven't been hurt enough. I tell you what, when I was crying those tears, when I called at the end of that week, when I showed back up again and everything's out in the front yard like it's supposed to be, when I made that call, I had the story ready to go. I used to carry a little notebook that would have the timeline of all the shit that I had told you. Like, Tuesday was a flat tire, dude. Tuesday, flat tire. 7-Eleven, got in a fight. It was her fault. So that way I can tell you, like, reiterate, because, you know, they start asking you questions like, you know, I don't know. But I showed up with a story, and then they pulled out the videos. See, I mean, I don't eat when I'm drinking. I take vitamins. I mean, I'm alcoholic. I ain't stupid. You know, I go in like, can I get the Brillo and that colorful vitamin thing? The one with the colorful, yeah, that one. I mean, I'm an alcoholic. I ain't stupid. You got to get your minerals. Yeah. And the video comes out, you know, and so, you know, I don't eat, so I'm withdrawing. You know, you could put blank sheets. You used to be able to put blank sheets in, you get 300 out. Take them a couple days to figure that out. Not anymore. I don't think it works that way anymore. But that video, my business partner, he let me, him and his dad, I think Todd just wanted to, like, you know, he's like, I can't believe this is happening. All the money's gone. from 15 grand a month. Where's the money, dude? Dude. You know? And here I am, like, how did this happen? Like, you know, honestly confused. You know? You know, why did you do that again? So the video comes out, you know, and the video, you know that video, you know how you look. I'm like the incredible shrinking Thomas day by day. Day 12. You know. Thanks. Thank you. And everything was burned up again, you know. And she stayed. She stayed. She said, but you're going to have to go to treatment. And the first time I ever identified with, I hated AA from the start. I got to tell you, I got to be honest with you. It's a weird place. I mean, I don't tell the newcomers that, like, oh, you're going to get used to it. It's not weird. That's you imagining. No, this place is weird. It's weird. I like it because it's weird. Like the way we were out there vaping and everything and all the talking and not the listening and, you know, the, you know, I tell you a story and you've got one that's just a little bit worse. The only place where, like, you know, oh, how many 5150s you got? Oh, psh, I got 12, dude. I like it. It's a weird place to live. And I like it. I suggest living with us. And joining the meetings before and after the meetings. Anyway, so the first time I identified with anything in the book, first of all, I was like, the second thing I didn't like about AA is like, that book is not that large. This big book of yours. Not that long, dude. I'm thinking that just shows you're not educated. I'm a dropout. I'm like a buck 05. I just lost lucrative business in my family. And you guys aren't that educated. I got some ideas how this could run smoother. Why don't you call on new people more? Jim says the same shit every day. You're not supposed to smoke in front, smoke on the side. You're not supposed to announce smoking on the side. Don't announce like that, dude. It's not AA related. Anyways, I'm getting lost. But my first sponsor, there's a part in there where Bill and Lois, our co-founder Bill, I mean, get a book, obviously. Find someone to help you go through it. Don't let anybody read it for you, but read it with someone. I believe that that's important. But in there, Bill, when he went to the treatment center for the third time, which is for anybody that says that everybody gets sober and stays sober. From the very beginning, we've struggled with this. And there's nothing wrong with if you did. I'm not pinning that down at all. But many of us are returners. And Bill Wilson was a returner. And the third or fourth time, they took it describes it that it's him and Lois and Dr. Silkworth. And they're discussing, like, what are we going to do with Bill? And that's what was happening to me. It was me, Shirley, Barry, and Mary. Barry and Mary owned ARS, Advanced Recovery Services. And we had paid, my grandmother paid $5,000 for me to get in there. And they're having a conversation, what are we going to do about Thomas? And they're not including me in the conversation. You ever have one of those? Maybe with your family. I know everybody in here identifies with that. If you don't identify with that, take a breath and think about it for a second. They're having a conversation, what are we going to do about Thomas? And I remember signing with as best I could. There was a sheet, and it said, I came to the group. I did what they said. I put nothing in my system that mood altering. And I was crying. I could barely get it out. And it was not fake. I meant it. I would have cut my arms off to have a chance to be a dad. Because that little 8-year-old that was jumping on the fence and walking through other neighborhoods, so you didn't know I lived in a mobile home park, the very last thing he was going to do was leave his kid, fuck this up. And I'm crying because I knew I was messing it up. And I couldn't explain why. And my grandmother even asked me before she paid. She didn't have $5,000 to put me in there. She asked me, like, why did you do it again? Like, with everything going so good. And for the first time in my life, I told her the truth. I said, I don't know. And our book says that most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscure, have no idea why they took the first drink. Once you get to a certain place, we may think we have reasons, it says in there. I forget the page. You should find it. And once in a while, he may tell the truth, and the truth strength to say is usually he has no more idea why he took the first drink than you have. And I thought it was good. I couldn't believe I was saying it because I didn't understand it, but the truth was I had no idea. It seemed to make sense. And it was the beginning of surrender. There is no surrender, and I know, yeah, but I know. I know. That's what we do around here. I know. Yeah, but I know. If you're hard-headed like me. So I told Barry, the owner of that treatment center, I told him, I'll do whatever you want. I told him that I'll cut my arms off to have a chance to be a father. I don't want the same thing to happen to my kids. He's like, great, sounds good. You sound like you're very considerate of it. Inside of a week, you know, I'm in that little circle, you know, working the program, being awesome. Like, Barry, I had a little bit of Vicodin. Not a big deal. You know? And he's like, you're out. And I'm like, are you kidding me? He's like, you're out. So from a week ago, I'll cut my arms off, to now I'm choking Barry. And they're pulling me off Barry. And Mary, this beautiful, his wife, his beautiful woman who spoke at Sierra Fellowship, who's a part of my life today, who was trying to save me from choking her husband. He could have pressed charges, but he didn't. You can't kick me out of here. I paid $5,000 to be in here. My grandmother paid $5,000 for me to be in there. You know what I mean? Smart guy. He said, go to 3 meetings a day, AANANEA, get it signed, and maybe we'll let you back. So that's what I did. So I was living at my mother and father-in-law's house. They had me sleeping on a cot in the garage. And man, I was resentful about that because Thomas was unpredictable. I was rollerblading to meetings. You know, busy schedule. You know, I'm like 5 minutes late. Right around the preamble is when I like to come in. Get some coffee, make some noise. Hey, what's going on? Disturbing the meeting with that crappy recovery of mine. Making a bunch of noise. Anyways, I didn't like a lot of things about AA. One of the things I didn't like is I was kind of getting serious. Like I knew my life was falling apart, and I had that internal condition going on where it was like, you're just like your father, but not only that, you're kind of worse because at least he left. Here you are, like, torturing him. You know you're going to get loaded again. And then the fear, which I didn't know my life was governed by fear. I didn't know. In fact, fear still doesn't sound like fear to me. I've got to have help to discover that it's fear. And to me, it's like framed in this, what's going to happen if and what's going to happen when. So I'm going to Northeast Fellowship in Clovis, trying to get these things signed, sitting in the meeting, trying to pay attention when it's going. What's going to happen when she finds out about all those girls you're messing around with? What's going to happen if they find out about the blank sheets of paper in those ATMs? What's going to happen when? What's going to happen if? What about her? What about your father-in-law? He's probably got her almost talked into leaving. Meanwhile, she should. You're worthless. Blah, 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 blah. Possible to stay sober. If you're new, welcome to AA. Does this sound familiar? You know, like, the voices, you know. If you're new, you're like, what voices? It's those voices that just said, what voices? it's like a new guy running the meeting, making shit up as you go along. You know, it's impossible to stay sober for very long. Willpower will work, and fear will keep you sober for a while. It did for me. I'm saying this in relation to me. Everybody here is, please, I'm not an expert. But I'm going to these meetings. I'm a little bit late. I'm roll-baiting over there. All this is going on inside me, and then they call on me, and all I could muster was, like, I'm grateful to be sober. No, I wasn't. I'm, like, trying to hold on, dude, get camera pressure. I'm just trying to survive. I don't want to get loaded, but, you guys know. It was terrible. And on top of that, I didn't like anything that was going on. First of all, I got all these real problems. They're talking about CPS talking to me about some stuff, and I come into this meeting here, I need help, I got real problems, and you're talking about stories about sheep and shepherds and God. I was like offended, like, serious? God? I got problems, dude. Like, no, seriously, does anybody feel that way? If you're new, welcome. I like to say it straight out. That's what I thought was a weird place. Like, I'm asking for help, and this doesn't seem to make any sense, man. And with that frame of mind, so I'm coming in late after the preamble in my rollerblades, making a big mess, and, you know, causing a big commotion. Don't want to be here. This doesn't make any sense. Nobody understands me. And I come in late. I sit down. In the back of the room is this guy named Bill Noble. I didn't like Bill Noble. Bill Noble was a big book person. He was gruff. You know, nobody sat next to Bill. So if I didn't like him, why did I sit next to him every day? Sit right next to Bill. And I come in and sit down, and, you know, all this stuff's going on, and he leans in and does one of those things, those sheep and shepherd things. He's like, "You missed it." I was like, "Mother." Because it's one of those things, like, you're going to try to teach me something. So I don't care. What do I care? 5 minutes, you know, if you're like me, if you're an alcoholic, I'm like, Bill, what was it? What did I miss? And he goes, "What you were supposed to hear." And I'm like, mother. I can see it as clear as day. I don't care. Screw Bill Noble. What do I care about Bill Noble? Another thing I didn't like about him was he had coveralls on because he was a mechanic because he worked. And he was on time, and my ass had nothing to do and couldn't make it to a meeting on time. And there was coveralls, you know, and he's not, you know what I mean? Uneducated. I didn't even know that was happening. You know what I mean? I wasn't a bad person. I'm not a bad person. I didn't know these things were happening. I mean, the story that's getting told is going on all the time. I didn't know what the hell. I didn't know I judged him. I liked him, but I hated him. And he had this another thing. So after the Lord's Prayer, we do the Lord's Prayer, and you know, I have to talk. I look around, and Bill Noble's gone. I'm like, and it's upstairs in Northeast Fellowship. It used to be, and there's windows, and there's a dirt lot right there. And there goes Bill Noble. He's trotting out. It's a lunch meeting, so he's going back to work. And he's trotting out to his white van, which is another reason I didn't like him. It's like some Science of the Lambs Buffalo Bill van, you know, with a bubble window in the back for him and his coverall. Probably had coveralls back there. You know? But here's it. Here's what happened. Here's the interesting thing that we can be surrendered and not know it. What does willingness look like? I think it's important to know what it looks like. How do you know that you have it? My first sponsor, Don McGugan, says, how you know if you have willingness is you wash your feet. We do a lot of this around here, and we should. It's part of the therapy. But what I really believe is what my feet do. So it's great to listen, but watch your feet. And I found myself in front of Bill Noble in the dirt lot. I don't even remember running down there, but I ran after him. I had to. I was upstairs. And this is how my memory remembers. And I come running out to Bill. I'm like, Bill, what was I supposed to hear? And he goes, how the fuck am I supposed to know what you were supposed to hear? And I'm like, that's willingness. I didn't know it then. I would have never done that before. You see how the disease can create willingness? And the willingness can dissipate, in my experience, over time. Pain is one way to get willingness. That man he didn't go back to work. There was no cell phone. He didn't call anybody. He had big books in the van. You know he did. And he spent the next 2-3 hours with me, asking me questions and talking to me, you know, I didn't know it then, but he was carrying the message of step two to me. We got into the fourth chapter. He said all kinds of crazy things like me. He's like, "You like hometown buffet?" I'm like, "Yeah, I like hometown buffet." He's like, "What if you walked in? What if you didn't know it was a buffet?" And I go, "What is this? What are you talking about? I don't know what you're talking about." Can you imagine if you went in and how resentful you'd be? Like, why is nobody bringing me any food? Like, everybody's getting fed except for me, and you don't know that you have to go get your own food. He goes, "That's how it is here. I notice you come late. I notice you're irritated, and you watch the clock. That's what I notice. You're not listening." And it's just like eating. Listening is something you have to do for yourself. Nobody can do it for you. And there's a big difference between listening and hearing. And you come to listen, and maybe you'll hear something. I can't hear that for you. I'm not making fun of you. How am I supposed to know what you're supposed to hear? That's your job. Nobody can go to meetings for you. He's saying things like this, and I'm like, usually be like, F this guy. I was starting to feel that, like I knew it was true. I was like, you know what? I know that's right. And he started asking me about God. You believe in God? And I go, yeah, I didn't believe in God. It's more important that you like me. My life's on the line. I cannot get honest. I have a hard time now being around here all these years. I need to work on being honest because I would much rather look better than feel better. But my life depends on it now. I have to spit it out. You don't have to do it here. Share in a general way. I don't want to hear about all of your crazy stuff in the meeting. Share in a general way, but find somebody you can tell it to. And I finally got honest later, but I said, yeah, I believe in God. You know, he's like, are you spiritual? I'm like, yeah, I like Star Wars. Force. Yeah. Think about it, honestly. You know, like, what's Yoda say? You must train yourself to let go of everything you're afraid to lose. Yoda. It's legit. We do a whole inventory for that. The thing you're afraid to lose actually loses the thing you don't want to lose. The fear creates the reality I don't want. Think I knew that when I came here? That day with Bill Noble? Nope. You guys taught me. You knew it didn't matter what I thought about God. But if I could get in the right position and stick around here long enough that I would discover my own. So you loved on me enough, and he talked to me, and he started talking to me like, do you think it's possible? I'm not saying it's true. Do you think it's possible you could pray at your house about a certain thing, come to the meeting, be on time, listen, and you could hear a message just for you through other people talking? I'm like, wow. Nah, he's like, possible. I go, it's possible. He goes, there you go. He got me, he sold me step two on possibility, dude. And that's what it is. It's possible. And I don't read stuff right either. Step two, came to believe a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. When I read it, it said, came to know that he would. It doesn't say that. You don't have to know nothing in step two. It says, came to believe that he could. I'm reading stuff wrong, and I hear stuff wrong. Hey, how are you doing? I hear, did you relapse? Hey, where you been? Like suspicion. Hey, I'm not cheating on her. Dude, I'm just wondering how you've been. I don't hear shit right. It's a disease of perception. It's a disease of more. More what? More everything. Time, money, love, respect. You know, comfort. So, that was early on. Other ways I knew I had willingness was I was doing other strange things, you know, like the middle of a noon meeting in Northeast that was going on inside that, they call it the spiritual malady, which is, it's that grinder, that meat grinder inside, that stuff that I was talking about earlier. You're worse than your dad, blah, blah, blah. How about the money? How about the cops? What's going to happen? Blah, 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 blah. And I just stood up. It's been like weeks, and I go, I need a sponsor. As somebody else, they're sharing. Somebody else is sharing. And Don McGugan, he said, I'll sponsor you. Go ahead and sit down. I went back to my like styrofoam cup with the straws through it. They tear it apart. It's got lines in it where I've designed, you know, it's like recovery crafts. It's like a little spiritual awakening recovery styrofoam satellite. You know, my leg under the table. Grateful to be sober. So grateful to be sober. I'm with you. I'm with you. If you're new, I'm not making fun of you. You know, another thing that happened in that time period. This is, thank you. All right. Another thing that happened in that time period is I learned about identification. I heard a guy the other day, somebody I love and respect, say, I'm not going to talk about my drinking. We all know how to do that. I'm going to talk about recovery. Bullshit. Where do you find that at? I would like to see it in our literature. Where is it? You know, because I'll tell you why. Because the laughter and the identification is key here, in my opinion. If we don't talk about the problem, how are you going to know you have it? Now, I'm not saying beat a dead horse and all the war stories with the colors and the lights and the strobe lights. And we don't need all that, but we better have to talk a whole lot about what the problem looks like, I think. And I'm talking about a sober problem that needs to be solved by something other than drinking. I need to find another way to live. Because if you can't find another way, if I can't find another way to plug those holes and do for me what it did for me with Teresa Brewer, if I can't find a way to have those wings that made me fly again, to be able to talk and be a part of and be connected with, I will not stay here in my experience. I will not stay here. You can't. I've got to find something. It's not perfect, but I've got to find something that plugs that hole. And I was telling them, like, my wife at the time was going to Al-Anon, and she started doing all kinds of crazy stuff, like not buying into my bullshit anymore. You know, because when I got kicked out of ARS, I was like, what about her? And he's like, oh, she can stay. She's in the significant other group. And Mary, who is a friend of mine today, was feeding her some health, you know. And so she started like, psh. And she was basically, I was telling her stuff to like stoke her up. Like, yeah, they told me I shouldn't be in a relationship for the first year. She's like, good, get out. I was like saying it, you know, to manipulate her. You know. There's, you know, better line up, honey. This Thomas Train's leaving, you know. Jeez, man. Retard. And I'm telling him at the new meeting house, you know, I mean it this time. And I did. I'm finished. I'm going to do whatever it takes. And I've got a sponsor now. I'm doing all this stuff. And she doesn't believe me. And the whole room at noon just started laughing. And I go, I don't think it's funny. And I walked out. And Bill Noble, again, came out. And he said, Thomas, we're not laughing at you, man. We're laughing with you. And if you're laughing in here tonight, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. Nobody comes down here on Christmas time on Saturday laughing at this kind of stuff. Unless, if you're laughing, you spot it, you got it. If you're laughing, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. If your first drink was an event, right, welcome here. So I don't even know how long I've gone on yet. I haven't even got to recovery at all. All right, so, yeah, so, you know, I got sober then. I mean, I did Alcoholics Anonymous alcoholically. I mean, I wasn't just like a regular member. Then all of a sudden I'm like telling my wife like about spirituality. You know, I had a spiritual awakening as a result of the steps. It was beautiful. You know, I went to our Jerusalem. 3 years sober. I'm like, baby, we need to go to Dr. Bob's house. And we did. It's beautiful. I've been to Dr. Bob's house. I stood up the top window and looked down in the corner where Bill's bedroom was that summer, what it would have looked like when, you know, he got up and looked outside and went to Dr. Bob's graveside. I went to the Mayflower Hotel, who now is just like a flop house, but you could look through the window, and that's where Bill was pacing, like hearing the gay chatter inside, it says, and that's not what it means, dude. I know, I heard you laughing. No, it's like Bill was going to get drunk there, and he made the phone call there. I got to see that. It was cool. And I stayed sober for a long time, you know. I stayed sober for 13 years. And like I told you before, I got drunk again. What does it look like? I think by and large in AA, I think I love the fellowship. We talk to the newcomer really well. We do a fantastic job talking to the newcomer when they come in. What we don't do so well, I think, is talking to the person in their last 30 days. What does that look like? Because my relapse started as I was in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's another thing that Don McGugan taught me early on. I was like talking about, he's like, tell me about your insanity that you need to be restored from. I'm like, oh, dude, crack. I was like shocked. I was like, he already knew me by then. He'd heard my story. I'm like, dude, you don't remember the crack house fire? The prostitute rescuing me? You know, like the money, blank sheets of paper, stolen cars. Insanity. I mean, obviously, he's like, no. That's not insanity. That's caused by a mind filled with alcohol and drugs. He says, is your grandmother an alcoholic? I go, no, my grandma's not an alcoholic. It's offensive. She's a beautiful soul. He's like, fill her up with a 16th of rock cocaine, a quart of Southern Comfort. She's going to do crazy, stupid shit. Does not make her an alcoholic. That's not the insanity you need to be restored from. Sanity you need to be restored from is having everything perfect. Knowing you have a problem. And with a sober mind thinking I can drink again. It's insane. The insanity happens to you when you're sober. I'm like, oh, shit. Relapse happens while we're in recovery. If you're a relapser. If you are a retread. And I welcome you if you are. We don't shoot our wounded around here, thank God. Somewhere around 10, 11, 12 years, you know, I'm coming to meetings. I was now a leader at work. There's a part in our fifth step in our book that says, more than most people, the alcoholic is very much the actor. A lot of creative people that have this disease. Very curious, isn't it? Really, really creative people we are. I think we know there's something better. I think we know there's something wrong here. And I've always been in a reality adjustment. Something wrong here. You know what I mean? Anyways, 10, 11, 12 years, I'm working graveyards. We have all this stuff going on. We have all this stuff in our lives. And I started playing paintball again, you know. Remember that other power grade in ourself? And I started doing, yeah, I was going to play on the weekend, you know. In 2 months, I'm at Orlando, Florida at the World Cup. Because I was a good paintball player. It did something for me inside. And my wife at the time, she's like, you got to come home. We have a family right now. I'm like, you don't understand me. You know, here I'm sober. She didn't understand what it did for me. Like, I can do both of this. Just give me time to get all this straightened out. Before you know it, you know, I'm coming to meetings. I'm telling people, you know, about, you know, that she doesn't recognize. She doesn't understand me anymore. All the old resentments came back all over again. They don't understand me at work. I'm not making enough money. No, you know, she doesn't understand this is important to me. And blah, 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 blah. What does a relapse look like? It looks a lot like the other stuff. Instead of now, these are my resentments, and I'm in a meeting talking about I have resentments. I don't think they're resentments. It's just the truth. It's not a resentment. You're just an asshole. It's not my resentment. You know, and over time, I would come to the meeting, secretary of the meeting, you know, I'm telling people I'm having other issues, like at work, like I'm getting some coffee at the coffee machine. There's a smoking room here, and there's some large windows. And in there, there's this cute girl, and I've been looking at her way too long. I'm not going in there. I'm working with a sponsor. I'm praying about it, so on and so forth. Next week, same thing. This time, I kind of look at her a little bit too long, you know. And I'm telling people in the meeting next week. Yeah, I kind of went in. We spent some, you know, we just talked for a minute. Nothing really happened. I'm talking to my sponsor about it. And I'm praying about it. When I woke up at Motel 6 with her, I did not tell you about it. Not Thomas. I mean, with this program I got going. You know, this polished machine. You know, and I deserved her. Somewhere in our book it says that that other person may seem like the right person. I don't know. I'm going to the wrong place. 2 years after that, I told her, you know, I want a divorce. You know, in 2 years, I was at a paintball tournament, just on the cusp of greatness, Tony. You know, on the cusp. There was a team called the Ironmen, who is a professional paintball team. I grew up worshiping these guys, and I was basically on the bench. And they call it the show in paintball, too, the pro level. And if I was one injury away from being in the show. I'm sober. I'm not going to meetings because I'm, you know, totally connected with my new higher power, these paintball. I'm there with my friends, you know, the guys on the team, and they come, you know. I wish I could tell you, like, the skies parted, and I really, like, played the drink through. Like, this whole concept, which I think is great, the play the tape through. Good concept, if you're sane. I play the tape through. I have a drink. It's not like Gates of Insanity and Death. When I play the tape through, I end up on the top of the Mirage with Pam Anderson. That's what happens to me when I play the tape through. Good luck with that. Anyways, the beers came out, and I wish I could tell you something more. I was away from meetings for a while. I was living in self-will. Everything seemed right. And I thought to myself, it'll be okay. You know, the Heineken. It'll be all right. It's never been, I mean, you know what I'm saying? And 2 years later, I had 5 5150s in a row. I had a visitation with my kids, so Thursdays was my day with the kids. It was a Tuesday or a Wednesday that I appeared at my daughter's fourth grade class. The police report said that I was confused, disheveled, and dirty. And the reason I say the police report is because I read it. I don't remember being there. And I pulled her out of her classroom and told her she didn't belong to me anymore. Yeah. It's going to be okay. You know, it's not okay for an alcoholic to drink. You know. So, you know, I ended up back here, and I'm running out of time, but I ended up, you know, back in Alcoholics Anonymous again. The first year has been 9 years I've been sober. I'll take the clap. I'm going to try to close this up. First 2 years I was back, people would out, you know, I would share, like, you know, when I came to AA the first time, when I came to AA the second time, I was brought. I didn't come. Big difference between being driven somewhere and driving somewhere. My mom took me to Sierra Fellowship, opened the door in a Bronco, and pushed me out. It's like I just discovered I was in meetings again, like, whoa, what's going on? My friend Mike Reynolds started, you know, you guys started hustling me back up again. And, you know, and I'm back. and it's good. That little boy, remember the boy that I did, I would do anything not to do that, what my dad did. He graduated from Fresno State 2 years ago. Thank you. He's in Los Angeles trying to make it. He does animation on computers. He's brilliant. He's working two jobs and never asked me for money once. Isn't that something? I have a daughter who's a senior at Buchanan High School. She just got, I haven't told any of my friends that are here tonight, but she's been putting out applications for USC and a couple other big schools that she dreams of going to, and she already got one acceptance and a scholarship. Yeah. And I'll close up with this. There was about 2 years after that when I came back to AA, my daughter, she was fourth grade, she's fourth, fifth grade, and I started to get worried that I was going to so many meetings and AA was taking hold of me again that she had never heard that. My son remembered me being at meetings when he was young. He would bring me chips. But I started getting a little bit worried about Cassidy, my daughter. What do you mean meetings and why are you going all the time and what's wrong? Why did dad do that? You know, because they had told her, you know, they had told her that dad was sick, you know, which I was like, that's good. He's not a drug addict. He's sick. I'm okay with that. But I toiled over it. My sponsor, Chuck, I told him, I'm really worried about what happened to her. Like, is she that girl? Like with the dad? You know, the second 5150, they got me naked out in front of my condo, dude. Like, I had two American ambulance drivers, and the police report said that they thought I was on PCP. I was so strong. Thank you. Man, the nakedness. I had a bad go of it. So, is she that girl? Like, hey, that's a girl. That's Cassidy. Her dad's crazy. Crazy. Yeah, you know. So he said, talk to her about it. And I toiled over it like I'm thinking about it. I should explain like the phenomenon of craving and the physical allergies. I should explain the spiritual malady, you know. Explain this to her, what the problem is and what I'm doing about it. So I finally pulled her out into my patio. And I said, hey, you know I go to these meetings now, right? And she says, yeah. I go, you know I go a lot, right? She goes, yeah. And I go, do you know why I go? And she goes, yeah, you know, so you don't get sick again. I'm like, but why do I have to keep going to the meetings again? She goes, so you don't forget. And I'm thinking, you should be my sponsor. You know, and I've watched her grow up, and she's not that girl with the crazy dad. So sometimes we should listen. That's as simple as it is. I stop coming to Alcoholics Anonymous, I get sick. I forget that I'm sick, and then I get sick. So I'm going to keep coming back. If you're new, welcome. Thank you, Jessica and Nick, for having me come out. I've had a great time. It's such a pleasure to see you guys. When I first came here to Alcoholics Anonymous so long ago, like I mentioned, I would have traded places with anybody. Black, white, yellow, gay, transvestite, old, in a wheelchair. I felt so ashamed. You know, this is the last place I wanted to be. And tonight, and I mean this, there's no person I'd rather be than me. And there's no place I'd rather be than here with you guys tonight. And I thank you so much for inviting me.